Welcome to the... No, that was a really weird way of saying it. Sorry.
No, we do welcome.
Yeah, I know. I just said it in like a weird way.
But welcome. Again. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Welcome. I'm self-conscious now. Welcome to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast with me, Sam Pryor, and my co-host, Aidan Roberts.
Hello.
Thought you weren't going to say anything then.
Yeah. Suddenly, when you said, "Oh, I'm like watching my words," I started overthinking words way too much. There's actually quite a lot of words in our podcast name.
Yeah, it is.
I feel like I might mess it up every time. welcome.
Yeah, welcome. So the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast with me, Sam Pryor, and my co-host Zane Roberts.
Hello.
This week we have the probably most requested guest on our Patreon page, which is Sam Lawson, who is the man behind the Wedge YouTube videos. Formerly Fat Sam and Lawson Beta Productions. But he also makes up the triumvirate of Sam's to do media with Aidan. So this is Sam who makes the YouTube videos, not Sam who makes the pictures and photos, or Sam who does the podcast.
All distinct, all different.
Sam's been doing Wedge for a little while, done lots of videos with Aidan and Jim. Also, he's done a lot of climbing himself. Always easy to forget that he's himself a well-accomplished climber. But he's recently released a big film with Aidan called Mastery, which follows Aidan's journey of the last year, doing some really hard climbing in the UK and Switzerland. So it seemed like a really good time to get him on for a chat.
Yeah, it was a nice discussion. I would also like to thank our Patreons. I had a nice little, for the first time, met a patron in the wild just yesterday, actually. I'm currently based here in Ticino, and there was, and I was just trying a boulder with some friends yesterday, and they left to catch a train, and so I was just trying it into the evening by myself, and out of the woods wandered Bryce, who is one of our patrons. I think he's commented a few times, I think. Anyway, it turns out he owns a climbing wall, or helps run a climbing wall in Switzerland, and has an apartment here in Quantico for a few weeks. So it was lovely. It was nice to, he came over and said hello, explained who he was, and we had a really interesting conversation. Felt like I learned a few things from our discussion. So it was really nice to meet him. And so if any patrons are climbing in Ticino, maybe, I'll see you around. But if you'd like to join our community of patrons, then there will be a link in the description.
All right. Cheers for listening.
Thank you. I'm in no rush. Life is simple.
Yeah, you're on a rest day.
Yeah, it's been a laundry day today. And, turns out that takes quite a long time when you leave it for a while and all your t-shirts are dirty.
Are you washing them in a river?
Yeah. Yeah, you said it. You said it as though it was ironic, but I am washing my clothes in a river.
Yeah, I assumed you were actually going to like a laundrette or something.
No. I'm living the simple life, washing over. Have some like a some little wilderness wash stuff, and it's nice, therapeutic. Get some ice to fingers, active recovery, wringing out all your t-shirts. It's been good.
Well, yeah, fills a day as well, doesn't it, when you're away?
It actually does. It takes a really long time.
Yeah, I bet.
Right.
All right, let's go. I'm curious a little bit on the origin of this. One, I might be really stupid in a minute, but why is it called Wedge?
Well, it's not particularly there's not like some sort of deep meaning to it, really. Basically, I used to climb with this guy called Cliff, Cliff Hopkins. He's moved to Australia now, but we always used to like, we went through a bit of a phase where we were into just like lifting weights. And we used to like think it was funny how like climbers have this kind of like wedge shape to them, in the sense that their shoulders are really broad and then they just sort of wither away at the bottom.
Essentially
the meaning of the name. It's in reference to the physique of a climber.
Okay. All right. That does actually make sense then.
And exclusively features wedge people.
Well, I feel like I'm probably the least wedge person that consistently is on the channel, but definitely you and Jim bring up the ratios a bit.
Yeah. And what came first for you? Were you climbing before you were making videos, or were you making videos before you were climbing?
Properly climbing before properly making videos, but I used to make like little home videos before I climbed, but they were very much like nothing to write home about.
Wait, well, you used to make videos non-climbing based?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever put them on YouTube or anything, but like, I don't know. I used to do a little bit of kind of like, well, to say I used to ride BMX is an overstatement. I used to have a BMX and try to ride it very unsuccessfully. I could ride a bike, but I couldn't do anything cool on it. Me and my brother used to like sort of film a few things of that nature before we were into climbing. But yeah, mainly as a result of climbing, started making videos.
And the first iteration was Lawson Beta Productions, right?
Yeah, I actually think that might have been the second. I have a feeling it was the channel was probably initially called Fat Sam Productions with a PH.
I wish it still was.
Yeah, there might even be like a number 4 in the name as well, instead of an A.
I can't believe I didn't know that. Fat Sam Productions. Wow, yeah, bring those days back.
Yeah. I do regret that I changed the name, because that is a classic name.
Yeah, that's top tier. How did you get into climbing in the first place? Because you're from Norfolk, aren't you?
Yeah, from Norwich, which is
the flattest county.
The flattest, and also probably I don't think there's like a single like rock type in Norfolk that's climbable, even if there was like sort of the right geography for it to be there. It's all like, there's chalk, which I guess you could climb if you were really keen, but yeah, it's not ideal for climbing. Well, yeah.
Never need to chalk up.
I just got into climbing through my older brother, Joe, as much as I'm sure you've said in the past, the classic case of kid's birthday party, I think.
Oh, yes.
Which has developed. But I think I just did it because he did it, but then got kind of into it.
And how long was it before you were starting to actually take videos and taking that side of it quite seriously?
I would say I've only really taken it seriously in maybe like the last 5 years or something, but I've probably started making climbing videos like a few years after I started climbing, maybe, because I used to watch a lot of the like the old climbing films on DVD. Like, I remember watching used to watch the Dosage films quite a bit, and actually I think it's just been put on YouTube the other day, but have either of you seen Winter Sessions?
Oh wow, because that was actually going to be my next question. And yeah, if there was any old school real inspirations for you.
If you've not seen it, go and watch Winter Sessions. It's a piece of like peak bouldering nostalgia.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I have. I do remember this. Who are the climbers in that?
Well, it's like loads of people. And I think what's quite cool is it's like not everyone in it's like a total wad. Like, they're all good climbers, but they're kind of just sort of climbing like fairly attainable grades, sort of like most of the boulders in it are sevens. There's not like, it's not just people smashing out, well, I suppose I think it came out like 2006. So I suppose back then it wasn't commonplace for people to be climbing like 8B in a few goes. But yeah, I just liked it because at the time I wasn't very good at climbing. So like the idea of climbing a 7A was like kind of like the end goal. So it was quite cool to see a film that was just full of 7As basically.
Relatable climbing media as well, because often there's so much emphasis on the elite. And I mean, you see a little with the rise of like YouTube media as well. I feel like that's growing quite a lot in its popularity as well. A lot more of these like relatable challenge channels, people climbing at a grade which is quite attainable for lots of the viewers as well.
Mm. Well, I think that's probably more popular than, it's definitely more popular than like high end climbing. I think like with the exception of like Mellow and then people like Adam and Stefano who've got their own channels. I think most of the biggest climbing channels are sort of entry level to sort of just kind of like average climber level. And it makes sense because obviously most of the market isn't an elite climber and probably would like to watch stuff that's around what they climb. So yeah, I think it's sort of adds up really.
But then again, that's also like quite specific to climbing, because in other sports that's not really the case. For people who like play football on a Sunday and have a kickabout, they would maybe more likely watch a Premier League than some like League One game. Same with tennis, they'd probably watch Wimbledon as opposed to...
But that doesn't carry over to YouTube though, because like all sports now have got like YouTube channels of friends taking part in that sport that is really, really popular. So football's got loads of like groups of guys who've got like good sort of banter and interactions between each other, but they're just sort of pretty good at keepy uppies. They're not like great footballers.
Okay, yeah. I haven't delved into that world, to be fair.
No, I can't claim to watch much football YouTube, but like you say, I guess maybe with YouTube, because it's like it's not like when you watch something on TV and it's like a show that's been produced by loads of people. It's kind of got that somewhat personal element to it. And I guess people just quite like that. It feels a bit more informal, which kind of works quite nicely with maybe not necessarily like always having like the best of the best.
I think it's really nice. It feels like it's drawing the personality back into climbing media, which Instagram was kind of stamping out.
I guess it's quite like what you were saying on your, can't remember whose episode it was, but you were saying about how like Instagram doesn't even like put up the, you have to like click see more to like read what people have said and stuff. Yeah. So it's kind of like, yeah, there's not much of that gets conveyed really.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think we will see more people, you know, the big earners in the sport, I think will now be really well correlated to kind of YouTube and sort of being entertaining as well as, it's like climbing themed rather than climbing focused, if you know what I mean.
Personality.
Yeah. It's weird because on the one hand, it kind of makes sense that the people that are the best at the sport should get the most sort of funding or support or whatever. But then there's also, I guess there's the other flip side where it's like, if you're really good, but no one knows you're really good, then why does it make sense for a company to want to like support that person? But I guess that's maybe why a lot of the really good climbers now are starting their own YouTube channels and things. It's kind of like a good way to tick both boxes.
You know, when people talk about really wanting inspiration from climbers, or that's, you know, the thing that they say they get from watching hard climbers, I think if you're watching someone who's, you know, more than two grades climbing harder than you are, I don't think it really matters after that. You know, so like if you're watching people climbing 8A and you climb sort of 6B, then they might as well be pros, because you know it's the same difference. It's like something that's far off in the distance and inspirational for you, isn't it? So like necessarily have to be the best anymore.
Yeah, it's so true. Like I don't, for me, I mean, like, for example, the Aiden's replica of Burden of Dreams, like, yeah, you look at it and you think, well, yeah, that looks flipping well hard. But I wouldn't look at it and be like, oh, yeah, that looks so much harder than 8C or something that Aiden's done. Like, to me, they kind of look the same because they're both wildly above what I can climb. So it's not, it doesn't need to be like the absolute cutting edge for it to be sort of impressive or like, I agree with what you're saying. Like, it doesn't need to be too much out of your level for it to be exciting.
Yeah, yeah. In all avenues of media these days, consistency and regularity seems to be quite king. Publish cutting edge, absolute cutting edge climbing on a regular basis is kind of just like not really possible because nobody's really good enough. I don't know. It's way easier to
You can't produce
content.
Yeah. You can't guarantee that you're going to be sending something world class every week on Wednesdays.
On Wednesdays.
In time for the Sunday evening upload when most users are online.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit annoying how much of it is dictated by like algorithms and you like we reference Instagram and trying to communicate things on that. But that's maybe like further epitomizes it. A lot of it is governed, like you do have to somewhat play the game, don't you? And like appeal to these algorithms because on credit alone, the feats don't stand for themselves, but you have to almost play this media game somewhat as well. But is that something you feel you've had to adapt quite a lot? Because it kind of, I guess that's not really part of the filmmaking process that you'd usually associate with production. But you kind of have to fit into a mold somewhat, I guess, as well.
Yeah, that's kind of the worst bit about YouTube, I think, for me anyway, because you basically come to a point where you've, I mean, if you watch any video from like a YouTuber, say, like, they'll be like, how to grow a YouTube channel, they'll be like, oh, yeah, you need to like have the thumbnail and the title in mind before you even shoot the video, which just isn't really an option for climbing. And also, I don't think that's not the main motivator isn't to like just get loads of views or whatever, but it is quite frustrating when you've made a video and then you have that kind of point where you have to just think what thumbnail are you going to give it, what title are you going to give it, because if you've put a lot of work into something, you want people to see it. But and obviously the more people that see it has a knock-on effect of like you potentially get a bit more ad revenue or whatever, and it means that if you get more from it, it means you can kind of justify doing more. But then there's that line of like you don't want to then, or I find I have this like inner debate where I'm like, well, I could call it this and people will probably click on it, but they don't really want to necessarily go too far down the route of, well, I guess the sort of clickbait route, even if it's not technically clickbait. I feel like it feels a little bit devaluing sometimes, and I've definitely given things titles that are, you could argue, a clickbait, but I mean, I don't know, you've got to do it a little bit, otherwise things just don't really get the attention, which it depends on what you want out of it. Like if you're just making videos and you just want to, and it's purely like a for your own enjoyment and you don't need to get lots of views or anything, then I guess you could just call it whatever you want. And it's not to say that that's my primary motivator. Like the main thing I do it for is because I like doing it, but because I like doing it, I want to do it more. And in order to do it more, you need to get those other things. So it's kind of that like constant back and forth of trying to balance the two.
Yeah.
And do you find yourself like, because these things, sometimes they suck you in even when you're not like expecting it. But do you find yourself looking quite intently at the viewer figures and things?
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to say that I didn't, but I don't think anyone that makes YouTube videos doesn't look quite regularly. Because it's kind of, do you get like analytics and things from the podcast? Like I imagine you get something, and even if it's not that important. You still quite like it when the number goes up.
Oh yeah, I mean, I like to look at it. I mean, Aiden doesn't, because he doesn't even have access to it, and he never even asks.
we're not all as pure as Aiden.
Aiden has no idea, doesn't ask. So
no, but I get updates every now and again, which is kind of nice. But and like, it makes sense that you'd be investing that, because it's kind of your passion and your work in context of your videos you make, Sam, or even this podcast. Like, it's something that we invest some time and energy into and thought, and it becomes somewhat of like a representation of something that we've like put some effort into creating, this piece of content that you put out to the world for other people to listen to. Like, I don't know if there were no listeners, like literally no listeners of this podcast, or no viewers of the Wedge videos, you probably wouldn't put the same amount of effort into them. They're enjoyable and you like doing it, but you do it for the climbing community partly as well, or you're making some contribution in that sense. And when you're putting out those bits of work, there's obviously going to be some investment into how well they're received as well. Like, I remember when me and Sam Pryor first, I'm going to have to use second names in this one, publicized, or not, we hadn't even publicized it, when we first sat down and did our first podcast recording, and it was just me and him chatting to each other. We were just having a discussion between us, and we sat down in his room. We were kind of nervous. I remember feeling nervous.
Oh, I was definitely nervous, yeah.
The first part of the conversation, we were like kind of stressed out. And that was like before anyone had even listened to it, before like it really existed, or we knew how many people would listen to it, kind of thing. There was actually no reason why I would even need to like publish that. But there's that feeling. I feel like those nerves often came from like knowing we were putting something out there for the climbing world to listen, like receive. And it feels like you put something on the line, or like as if it's some reflection of your capability or our ability to have an interesting conversation, or Sam Lawson, your ability to make films. Like, you want it to be well received. So inevitably you're going to be somewhat invested by how it gets received. And an easy metric of that is how many people are listening to it or commenting on it or sharing it. And I guess YouTube's nice in that you get comments. For the podcast, you don't really even get comments. So I guess numbers is kind of all you have to go off.
Do you read all your comments, Sam?
Yeah. Normally, you know, if you were a massive channel, you'd probably like, it would be impossible to like go through all of them. But I quite like it, because I'll get like an amount where it's like, it's quite nice to sort of go through and read, like properly read each one. But like, it would be rubbish if you didn't get any. And it would be kind of, I'd feel bad if you got loads and you didn't actually go through and weren't able to take the time to like read them and stuff. But yeah, I feel like I get quite a nice amount of like every like sort of half an hour or something after you put a video out, you can just like open up the little studio app and there'll be like four or five more comments that you can like have a little read of and reply to, which is quite nice. And usually they're pretty positive, which is nice as well. Like, I've definitely, it's definitely not, I mean, not that I get lots of negative comments, but again, it's one of those things where I'd like to say that I didn't mind when you get negative comments, but like, it's hard not to. But yeah, thankfully I don't actually get that many, which is quite nice.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I would love to be able to say that I wouldn't care about negative comments, but I definitely would. So
it's a bit of a strange idea to have like explicitly negative comments on a YouTube video. Is that for free? Like, yeah. if you don't enjoy it, just like don't watch it.
I mean, as I was saying, I don't actually get an awful lot, which is good. And I think the thing is like, even if you don't like something, I don't think I've ever been to the point where like I dislike something enough, I'm like, right, I need to let this person know that I dislike this.
In public, as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. It's not actually a problem I particularly have, thankfully. But yeah. I probably wouldn't deal with it too well if I did get lots of negative comments.
No, true. I mean, like, it'd be easier to take if it was like more of a private thing, but the way that social media is so often laid out now, like to criticize something, you have to like point at it in front of everyone and go, this is shit.
Well, and then YouTube will give you this option where it's like, do you agree with this comment? You could give it a thumbs up. And then it's just like a little button for people to be like, yeah, I also think this is shit.
I've been thinking a little bit with watching the Wedge videos come out, is, and I'd be interested to hear your take on it, but YouTube seems like it's kind of more set up to do the like once a week 10 minute video than it is for the big high budget film type video.
Yeah, definitely. Like I think if your aim was primary aim was to like get a bigger following or get more views or whatever metric, the way to do it is to make at least consistent videos. Probably think like once a week seems to work for most people. And yeah, it depends on the style of video, I guess. Like certainly at one point YouTube would basically assess whether a video is good based on the average percentage that people watched of it. So obviously the shorter a video is, the higher average view percentage will likely be higher. Because obviously if a video is 1 minute long, most people will probably watch most of it. Whereas if a video is an hour long, loads of people will click straight off it, and then that'll class as like a really low percentage watched. So I think certainly at one point it was leaning towards shorter videos being better. But then the other side is like, if a video is longer and you're trying to make money, then you can put more ads in a longer video. But it's, yeah, I don't know. I prefer doing the bigger things, but yeah, it's definitely not as effective for YouTubering. But it is quite nice doing them though. I think I'm just trying to do a little bit of both, of kind of like the training videos that I've started doing with Jim and Aiden. Like they're not, I don't like making them. They're not the reason that I'm started making videos, and they're not my, like, they're not the ones I'm most pleased with, in the sense that I just personally prefer outdoor climbing anyway. So I'm not as excited about the board stuff, but I do still enjoy making them. It's obviously like good fun, and you're making videos about climbing, so it can't be that bad. But like, it's quite good that they are so popular, because we can do them I can make them relatively quickly in comparison to the other videos. So it's easier to be a bit more consistent.
I find it funny how people enjoy those things as much as they do as well.
I'll often be making a video and I'll be like, I kind of enjoy this because I was there and it was kind of funny. But are people that interested in like basically three men hanging out in a cellar holding pieces of wood? Sometimes they've got their shirts off. It's pretty niche, isn't it?
I don't know. It's pretty popular, that kind of content sometimes.
Yeah. When you put it like that, maybe it makes sense.
When you boil it down.
But I mean, certainly from my perspective, like as someone who wasn't there, I think there's such a difference between that style of video and the big film. So like when the Aiden and Jim training on a board video comes out, I will always watch it, but most of the time I'll put it on in the background and kind of just listen to it while I'm cooking or something, because I'm in it for the little bits of banter, like the bit in the most recent one where you're trying to figure out the dimensions of the board. And Jim goes, I ask Aiden, he's got a degree in maths, I've got a degree in PE. And that's just really funny. Like, it's those little bits of like Aiden looking at his fingers and just going, ah!
That's kind of 50% of what Aiden's doing when he's in the cellar.
But then when you've got like the big video that just recently came out, that was like a kind of sit down, watch it properly over dinner kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I expect, really, with like the board videos, kind of like, because I'm the same. Like, I don't actually watch loads of climbing YouTube, but generally when I do, if it's that sort of style where it's almost like a vlog, I'll have it on while I'm kind of doing something. Whereas, yeah, like if you were watching, like, there aren't really like loads of big climbing films these days anyway. But yeah, I would, like you said, if it was like a proper sort of film, I'd sit down and actually take it in. Because other than that, I basically have a pretty awful attention span these days. So yeah, it's quite easy to just be doing something else while you're watching something.
At that point, it is almost like those, they play different roles, don't they? Like when you have something which is quite, I don't really know the term for it, but it's like kind of like passive watching. Like you kind of like watch it and it's entertaining, but like it doesn't have your focus.
Mm.
It's like telling a different story to the like films where people like sit down, kind of have soul, like you have their attention. But like you say, there aren't really many modern long climbing films or documentaries these days. I actually really enjoy watching like those like kind of more lighthearted videos. We had Turner on the other week, and I quite enjoyed his vlogs when he was so doing those.
Yeah, and, no, they were good.
And like, I quite enjoy all of those things. They're like good watching. I think if I look back over like my favorite climbing videos, they're nearly all like climbing films, and they're probably the older ones because, yeah, it seems these days there's maybe less momentum towards those longer projects, which maybe tell a bit more of a story, I guess.
I think it is largely because of the YouTube algorithm and the like ephemeral nature of content these days. Like the most of the content that goes onto YouTube that does really well on YouTube isn't really designed to last. But when I was watching the recent Wedge video, Mastery, it's called Mastery, isn't it? My main thing I was thinking was, it is crazy this is just available for free now on YouTube, because this used to be, you know, if you'd made this like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I would have bought a VHS of this.
I mean, it would be cool to like actually sell a sort of physical thing, but I just think in this day and age when everything is basically free, it almost feels a bit wrong to ask for money for stuff. Because there's loads of good stuff for free on like on YouTube and stuff, and I quite like that, because even if something only costs like, well, maybe it's just because when you used to have to pay for things, I basically had money, so the idea of spending like 20 quid on a climbing film, you had to be like, oh, I need to really want it. Whereas like, I think that's just sort of stuck with me. So whenever you see that you have to like pay for a film, you're like, oh, now I'm going to have to consider if I really want to watch it. Whereas if it's free, you'll just give it a go.
It's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? Because if you're trying to communicate some stuff for a film, then like putting it out for free to loads more people in many ways seems quite a wise option, in that just like loads of people see it and it helps like growth, I guess, just in terms of publicity. But at the same time, there's also the phenomenon of when people invest something, when there's like some personal investment, usually they like invest more into that experience as well. Classic example of, I don't know, therapists tripling their prices and suddenly like loads more people. Well, no, actually that's a bad example, but like loads, but it's kind of like when people actually like pay for something, usually like you say, there's a bit of like, oh, I'm going to really appreciate this, and you give it a little bit more. So maybe those people are more like susceptible to, yeah, listening to what there is to say. But yeah, like you say, that you don't really pay for, I don't really know of any climbing films. It wasn't that many years ago when you'd like pay for like Vimeo films.
Well, I guess what people do now is like you initially would put a film into like either do some showings or put it into a festival where you maybe got some money from that, or people bought tickets to go and watch it, and then you would then put it out for free later or something, which I think is kind of what we initially were going to maybe try and do with this. But I think basically just the timings of things didn't really work out, because, well, obviously you're not in the country, so part of the thing that we sort of talked about doing was having like, you could do like a bit of a Q&A or something, either before or after. Things move so quickly in like the climbing world now that it's already took quite a while to get it out as it is. It seemed like we could have waited until you were back, but then that would have been like delaying it like a further 2 or 3 months or whatever, and by that time, you know, no one cares because something else has come along.
Yeah, people forget, don't they?
Yeah, so it was kind of yeah, it would have been nice to do that with this film, but at the same time, it was getting to the point where it was like, actually, I think it would be quite nice to just sort of have it out rather than just sitting on it for ages.
Yeah. And I left for 3 months. Oops.
And in an attempt to kind of demonstrate the slight issue I can see with YouTube, how many Aiden and Jim training on a board videos do you think you could have made in the same time it took you to make that film?
Oh, probably enough to keep me going for most of the year.
Yeah, if you could have made 50-odd videos, then 50-odd videos on YouTube of like popular content will do significantly better than that one film.
Yeah, or I could have split that one film up into like 10 shorter ones.
How come you didn't want to do that?
I just feel like it kind of, I don't know, I just wanted to make a bigger film. I feel like it's different if they're like maybe like slightly longer episodes, but like little sort of like 10-minute videos, we have to keep waiting for the next one. It just sort of interrupts the flow of everything. Like, I think when you see a complete piece all as one, it kind of, if there's a storyline, it's easy to follow, and it's quite nice to sit down and watch it all at once rather than watching like a little bit of it and then having to wait and then watching another little bit and forgetting what happened in the previous ones.
Yeah, I think because this was actually probably one of the first videos that I've done with you, Sam Lawson. God damn it, every time. of like where I was like part of maybe the process of like the storytelling as well. Like, I guess there was, we did interviews, so some of the things I would say would guide the storyline as well. And so I was kind of like more part of the process of making the film. Well, no, not any of the editing, obviously, but in terms of like, I was in the loop and would be giving feedback about like, yeah, the direction of the film. And it was definitely nice because I think for me, telling a story was an important part of it. And it felt like you had, it was much easier to do that in a longer format film. Maybe like, yeah, you say it's less like broken. And also it feels like be somewhat more profound when, you know, the people that are watching it are sitting down and you have their attention for 45 minutes as opposed to little 10 minutes whilst they're doing the cooking.
Yeah, definitely.
So it feels like a nice opportunity there. I wanted to, because I thought it was quite good to be, well, good opportunity, filmmaker. We haven't really had many film. We've had some people who've made videos, but like actual like professional climbing filmmakers we haven't had on the podcast. And feedback I have had mostly from people talking about like wedge videos, or like maybe what sets it apart is often it captures a lot of the like crag antics, and I kind of feel like gives a bit more of a like holistic idea of the experience of a day climbing and not just the climbing ascent. So it kind of maybe feels a bit immersive in like the day and the day like of climbing. And I've definitely had that. I've like, well, I watch the wedge videos and sometimes it feels a bit funny watching videos, which I'm in as well. But like when I do that, see the story from like on the screen, often it feels quite authentic to the day which I had. So and I feel like that's something which maybe like sets it apart perhaps from a few other climbing channels, definitely like outdoor climbing anyway. So generally like it's a feedback I had I've had mostly, I think, about wedge. And I was kind of wondering like how you felt you set about like telling a story of a climbing day, because maybe like how that that feature of wedge has like come about, really, because maybe that's something which is slightly less standard as well.
I think that's kind of relative, like a relatively new thing really, because all of my old like early videos was generally me a lot of me filming myself, and it would just be like, or filming me and Joe, and it would just be like, we'd just put the camera on a tripod and then go and climb. And then they were like, kind of like you say, they were just, it would just be the climbing. But I think probably came about doing more of this kind of, like you were saying, holistic style of filming when I basically started climbing with more people that were kind of keen to be in videos, if that makes sense. Because like, obviously some don't particularly enjoy having a camera pointed at them, which is very understandable. I would probably fall into that category. So I think the, yeah, probably like doing a lot of, doing more stuff where I'd like go to the crag with like Jim and yourself and various other people. And then just kind of like, I don't particularly think about, I wouldn't like go to the crag with a plan in mind. Usually if you just film a lot of what's happening at the crag, by the time you get to editing the video, you've got enough pieces to sort of some kind of a story, is probably a loose term for it, put some sort of a process into the climbing. I suppose they don't have like storylines as such. Yeah, I guess it's largely like the process of doing the climbs, or maybe like obviously the mastery film had a storyline, but kind of the shorter like days out of the crag is kind of just basically filming loads, and often just filming when you don't, filming when you don't think anything is going to happen, and then often the interesting things happen when you don't think they're going to happen.
Yeah, because I was going to say that I feel like lots of the clips that are the funniest, or like the ones that people quite like, I always find them quite funny, are the bits where I wouldn't usually think someone filming a climbing film would be like recording, which I think is kind of nice. I feel like those little bits of character around the films are only really possible when there's quite a personal relationship as well. Like, I think talking about a paid work, then like if there was like a filmmaker that was like paid by a sponsor, say like Patagonia hired someone, and I had no idea who they were, never met them before, and they were coming out to a day at the crag and were filming me, I would be quite reserved, or all the little outtakes which crop up in Wedge probably wouldn't be there, because I probably wouldn't speak my mind and say these stupid things which end up becoming funny.
You've got to be 100% comfortable, don't you?
Yeah.
I find it also works the other way. Like if I was out with someone I'd never met, I always feel a little bit uncomfortable. Just like basically, yeah, just sticking a camera in someone's face when they don't know me as well. Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot easier when you actually know the person and get on with them. And I guess at the end of the day, it's not, maybe a little bit more so now, but it's not like the reason I'm there is to film. It's kind of like, and vice versa, the reason that person's there is to climb, and the reason I'm there is, well, not so much when I'm injured, but normally is there to climb as well, but yeah, filming is at the same time, kind of thing.
And is this is your full-time job, Sam?
No. This is just sort of on the side for fun kind of thing. I'd like it to be my full-time job, but no, it's not. Not at the moment. Well, the Wedge stuff isn't. I do video making for work. The majority of my work isn't Wedge-related.
However, Wedge now has a Patroon account as well. So
that's true.
If Wedge fans fancy supporting Sam and his Wedge climbing endeavors. support your Sam of choice. Well, regardless of which Sam you'd like to support, there's a Patroon
account. There's a Patroon account for all.
Yeah.
But I mean, did you actually, it's an interesting thing to talk about, because did you struggle at all with the concept of starting a Patreon? Because I noticed, I mean, obviously you started one very late. You know, because Wedge has been around for a long time before you started the Patreon account.
I started it on the day that I put the film out, because I was like, well, basically, I've not wanted to do it. Always felt a bit, you're directly asking people to give you money, which feels a bit weird, because obviously you guys, you have like quite a lot of benefits and things that you give people, so it kind of like feels quite justifiable. And I would like to do that, but I've not been in the position where I felt like I've got something additional that I could really offer that I wasn't just going to put like out on YouTube anyway. That makes sense. I've sort of thought like all the videos I've made, I'd like to put them out for everyone to watch rather than hold some back and only a few people see them. But then actually I sort of was having a bit of a look around, and lots of people do have like a sort of a tier where it's just like, it's purely like, if you just want to help support, and I'm not particularly like giving you anything exclusive as such. I mean, like, I've put a few things up, like, I mean, I don't sell any merch, but I'd like to at some point in the future. So I've like sort of put like you'd have priority and that sort of thing. And obviously it's like, you have the feed that people can like comment on and you can like chat to them, and it's a bit more personal than on like YouTube or something. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of thought if I want to spend more time doing it, I need to try and get a little bit more money from it, really. So I thought I'd see. And also I've always been a bit worried that I'd like make one and no one would join, and then you just feel like a bit of a mug.
Yes, no, that was one of the big things for me when we were deciding whether or not to do it. It was just, if nobody joins, it'd be really embarrassing.
Yeah, I think I'd just delete it. if no one signed up in the first couple of days, I'd just delete it and act like it never happened.
I think my main fear actually was that like one person would join.
Yeah, because then you have to keep doing it. But
yeah. Exactly, just basically constantly trying to entertain one person.
But it's not the case.
Yeah. Have you got a Discord page?
No, I haven't. Do you find, is that like, I've never really used, or I have Discord, don't really use it. Is it much better than just using the Patreon? Like,
yeah, I think so. I think it's really easy. And it's actually, for me, it's the best thing about doing any of it, because like, we've got a really nice community of people on the Discord. And it's actually just really nice to have like a community of people that like will react to stuff as it happens. You know, like there was quite a lot of people messaging each other on there about Will live streaming his burden sessions. It's just kind of nice.
I mean, I probably will set one up, because it would be nice to sort of have a bit of communal chat thing.
Yeah. There'll probably be quite a few of our patrons on there.
Yeah, there'll almost certainly be some crossover. Yeah.
yeah. But it is nice.
Shared Patreons.
Yeah, a little collab. Oh, this is a collab.
Yeah, that's true. It is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, collabs are good for growth.
Ah, yes. Yes. Not if we have the exact same following, though.
Yeah, and exact same names.
Sam chats with Sam and Aiden.
It'd be great if we did this as video form, and then it was clearly just one person doing two different voices for two different
Sam. Wow, have you? That's a good conspiracy.
I was going to say, now that you've introduced that thought into people's minds, maybe
yeah, cats out of the box.
People think. Well, have you ever seen all three of us in the same place at one time? I don't think it's happened.
I don't think it's ever happened.
I don't think it's happened, no.
You can't disprove that we're not the same people.
Different hats.
I mean, I've definitely seen Sam Pratt and Sam Lawson in the same place. Have I seen Sam Lawson and Sam Pratt in the same place? Not Sam Pryor and Sam Pratt. This is so confusing.
At the school room, yeah. Yeah, Sam Pratt was at the school room.
Yeah, at the school room, yeah.
And actually, we only missed Sam Lawson by about 10 minutes that day, I think. So we were very close.
Oh, wow.
We were very close.
Heck, that's a confusing conversation.
One of the Sams just leave and then come back in.
Yeah, true. True.
Yeah, you left shortly before Sam Pratt arrived.
Yeah,
put on some blonde hair and that's about it.
It's gotten more confusing now. I was chatting to Jim the other day, and we were just going to have a catch up, and he was like, I'm just watching some TV with Sam. And I was like, oh, Sam Pratt or Sam Lawson? And then he was like, no, Sam Blackwell, because Sam Blackwell Sam Blackwell took up the room in Jim's house. So I took the room from Sam Pratt, and then Sam Blackwell has taken the room from me. So yeah, crikey. Oh, I almost said the address then. The house is confusing me.
I love that. Yeah, we love to interact with the fans, but please don't come to Aiden's house.
It's not even my house anymore.
Well, it's fine then.
Yeah, go visit if you want. I'm sure I'll give you a cup of tea.
but going back to the videos for a moment, Sam, do you have any more plans to do a long film like video again, or is that done for a while now?
I'd like to do more. I don't have any actual plans for like a big thing at the moment, mainly just because it does eat up so much time, and also it's kind of quite, it's one of those things where to get it to sort of nearly done isn't too bad, and then it's the last little bits that you just spend like what feels like days making absolutely no progress. And I feel like I'd like to have a little bit of time not doing that. But I'm hopefully going to head up to Scotland for at least some of the time that you head up, Aidan, and I'd be quite keen to do like something a bit more like what we did with Jim in Switzerland last year, like not one big thing, but maybe like two or three short, like relatively long, but shorter things, more like episodes rather than more than just like a little 10-minute thing, but not as big as a full-on film, but like a couple of them.
Mm, like a series.
Yeah, like a little series. Because I think I know I just said before that it's not as good when like the story's split up, but the flip side of that is, I suppose, if you watch one, you'll want to see the next one. And then it was quite nice with those Switzerland films, like every week I'd like premiere them and you'd get like, so I imagine the sort of same people would sort of come back and watch the next one and stuff. So quite nice to like have, like doing the premiere is really cool on YouTube because you just get to like chat to people on the, like on the side.
Yeah, that was really nice. Like
waiting for it to start and stuff.
That was really nice, actually. I've never been in part of one of those before. I feel like maybe I've watched things live, but I've never watched, I don't know if I've watched many premieres. Maybe I've watched a couple, but I've never like commented in. And it's quite nice. I was just like, replying to what people were saying. And it's another thing where you get like a little micro community of people all quite psyched and bouncing ideas off each other.
It's nice.
I also think those kind of like series kind of works quite well, especially when like the climbing or the area is the focus, as opposed to necessarily like mastery was like quite different in terms of like there was a lot of focus on like a bit of a storyline. To break that up is like maybe a bit more abrasive than if it is like you say, the Switzerland's ones we did with me, you and Jim last spring, where it's kind of like the climbing did most of the talking kind of thing, and then obviously like the crag antics as well. It almost didn't matter that they were broken up by a week, because it wasn't fractured a story. It was kind of like,
And when you set about to do a big film like video, how does it work with the funding? Do you try and get someone to sponsor it beforehand, or do you just try and make it and then get someone to sponsor it afterwards? Or because I know Patagonia funded it to a degree, didn't they?
Yeah, that was kind of more like we were just gonna kind of do it and see if we could get someone to support it, basically. Well, I think Aidan had mentioned that Patagonia could be to sponsor some stuff, but I'm really glad that they did, and it was really cool because they gave us a bit of feedback on it as well, which I think did help to improve it as well, which was nice. So it was quite, they sort of collaborated on it a little bit as well, which was nice. But I'd have still done it regardless. Would have been a bit more conscious that all of the hours I was spending on that was hours where I was not basically not making any money, which isn't the primary, or not making any money, losing money, which isn't like a massive thing, but it makes it a bit easier to really sink a load of time in something when you know that you're not just piling time into that at the expense of other things that you could be doing. But yeah, I mean, that basically the sponsorship, it's really nice, but it's not, in a way it's quite nice doing it off your own back to a degree, because then it's kind of, you have that sort of satisfaction of like you kind of made it all happen sort of thing.
Well, you have most freedom over you. You can be most creative, can't you? Because you can be.
I mean, that's kind of like one of the best things about doing stuff on YouTube, is that doing stuff on YouTube for yourself is you sort of have the final call on things. Whereas like on a sort of job for a client, you to a degree you obviously have an input and you sort of do, you do what you think is best. But at the end of the day, if whoever it is that's actually paying for it doesn't think that, you'll just, you sort of have to do what they say. So yeah, you know, it's quite nice sort of having autonomy over how things, over how things come out.
And what are you going to do for, have you got some plans for content to create while Aiden's away in Switzerland?
We filmed about a million board sessions before Aiden went away.
So many boards.
I've got some other sort of ideas of things I'd like to do. And as much as I obviously really enjoy filming and climbing with Aiden, like, I think it is also, I don't want it to just purely become people only want to watch the videos to watch someone turbo crimping grifters on 8Cs. Like,
good reference.
It's to have, I listen. I've done stuff with quite a few, obviously predominantly in recent times it's been with Aiden and Jim, but there's people that I've filmed with in the past I'd like to do a bit more with, and people I've not filmed with that I'd quite like to film with. So I think, but to be honest, for certain, while Aiden's away at the moment, I'm going on trip to Font for a few weeks, and then I've got quite a bit of other work on, so I'm not actually at too much of a loose end in terms of filming wedge things. I've got enough things to keep me going, and then hopefully, I'm quite excited for Scotland. I think that'll be good. I've not really climbed there, and I've certainly not done any filming and stuff up there, so it'd be quite nice to go to like a completely new place, because I feel like I've spent so many years filming things in the Peak District that you get to a point where like there's only so many times you can film something at Stanage or Burbage or whatever. You get to the point where you feel like you've sort of filmed it all. So it'd be quite nice to go somewhere that's like very different to sort of where I'm used to filming lots of things. So yeah, quite looking forward to that.
Often the films made about places have a lot of influence over like opening an area to climbers. It's definitely through films where lots of places around the world have become famous, being much more enjoyed by climbers. And Scotland is somewhere which definitely doesn't really have that. I mean, it's usually quiet. Not many people go up there. And maybe people will, travel to alternatives. And I mean, I've spent very little time up there, so I've definitely fit into that category. But the time I have spent up there, it's been flipping amazing. And it definitely gives you a bit of an opportunity to like paint a picture of a landscape when you filmmake.
Well, I've literally been to Scotland like maybe two or three times, not really spent much time there. And when I have, I've either just been to like, I've been to Edinburgh a couple of times, which obviously it's a really nice city, but it's not where the climbing is. And then the other time it was just like in the middle of winter and you couldn't get anywhere and everything was wet. So yeah, it'd be really nice to sort of hopefully get some more favorable conditions and, like you say, be able to sort of capture a bit of the landscape.
Showcase the area a bit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Dave McLeod, I always like watch his videos and think, God, that kind of makes the Peak look a bit like insignificant all of a sudden, like Stanage Edge, or well, I know Stanage Edge is it's cool. But like, I don't know, like little boulders in the woods at like Froggatt or something all of a sudden seem pretty like, insignificant when you're watching someone climbing like something halfway up a mountain or something.
Yeah. Mountain bouldering.
And is it, do you think you would like to do sort of YouTube videoing in general, like full time at some point in the future?
I don't know. Probably not like fully full time, because I wouldn't want it to. I think as soon as you become reliant on something for all of your living, like you then all of a sudden you kind of need to make a certain amount of money to live. And I don't think I would want that to be solely coming from something that I predominantly do because I enjoy it. I'd like to keep having it as like something that I do because I enjoy it for as long as I can while trying to do more of it. It's a bit of a weird balance really. But yeah, I suppose I would like to be able to do it full time, provided I didn't have to compromise the way I wanted to do it in order to make it work. If that makes sense.
How good is YouTube? Like, because obviously the videos are monetized, but I've got no idea how it works. Like, how many views do you need to be getting before you're getting kind of
sort of money that's worth, like, you know, makes it easier to make the videos full time? Like, what is it? Is there a kind of, what's the rate?
Well, it kind of changes from day to day. Like, it fluctuates. There's an amount that you'll get per, it's like per 1,000 views from day to day, the amount that YouTube or Google or whoever it is would pay for the ads. And to earn probably enough money to live in the current, with the current cost of things, to live not on like a shoestring, like, you need to be making quite a lot of, getting quite a lot of views. But I think the predominant, most people that are full-time YouTubers, I imagine they probably make more money from other sources than they would from purely from YouTube, like either sponsors or like selling things or that sort of thing.
Mm. But at least YouTube does give some money back, because I was listening a little bit to Tom Randall talking to the Nugget chap about it. And Tom did make the point that at least YouTube does pay, because like, he's got like over 100,000 followers or whatever on Instagram. Instagram don't give you anything. Instagram don't return any of their money to the people who have the followers.
I guess,
that is very true.
I guess to a certain degree, though, on like YouTube, you at least have a product in the form of advertisement, which you don't have so much on Instagram, right?
Well, every other thing is an ad now on Instagram, isn't it? It's just, I guess you don't really know. I guess, yeah, it's not so connected to that person. Like, it's more just on the homepage, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was just an interesting point about how, like, if you're really into making content, YouTube has a kind of light at the end of a tunnel and a future, whereas Instagram doesn't. Like, he was saying that some people think he makes money through his Instagram, and he's like, nobody has ever offered me to do an advert of any significance through Instagram. I've never made a penny from it. Which I thought that was like really interesting. I was like, I always assumed that if you had like hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram, you would monetize it pretty easily, but apparently not.
It just, the logistics are that like, I would need to be getting significantly more views than I am now to be able to rely on sort of YouTube full-time money-wise. And then the other thing is also like, if it was generating lots of money, it would be nice to be able to give people in the videos kind, not like as in, oh, I'm paying people to let me film them, but like, it would be nice to have a way in which you could sort of give a bit back to everyone that's sort of been in the videos. It's not like it's not like a work day or anything, but at the same time, there obviously a massive part of it is having people like Jim and Aiden in the films. So it would be good to be able to help those guys out as well. Be it making a living as a professional climber is not that easy of a thing to do by the sounds of it.
But then I guess at the same time, there's like a certain element. The existence of the videos is good for a certain like profile, which like
I suppose
in turn helps for negotiation of sponsorship and things like that, which then is like,
yeah, I suppose if you can,
athletes as well.
If you can go to a company and say that you get like watched this many times, I suppose that must help.
Yeah. Even if it is whinging about gnarly bruised tips from dry fans.
That's
on the
all
board.
People want to hear about.
Brands just want to associate with that guy. Yeah. Well, I thought we could talk a little bit about your own climbing as well. You said you were going to Font. The last I heard, you might not be going to Font, but maybe you are going to Font now.
Things have changed.
Oh,
slightly really? Less injured than I was when I last spoke to you, which
was about four days ago.
So I am going to Font now, which I'm quite excited for, and I'm hoping that that we'll get some good weather, because last time I went, it was very much damp forest and warm. Which it's always nice to be on holiday, but when it's wet in Font, you all of a sudden realise there's not that much to do other than climbing.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's good this time. I'm confident, because I think it's normally pretty reliable this time of year, whereas last time it was the autumn, which I think can often be quite wet anyway.
Place of extremes. You either have a very wholesome time scampering around the forest doing a load of physical activity, or you just sit in an Airbnb looking at the rain outside eating pastries and there's nothing in between.
Well, I mean, yeah, at least there's pastries. That's definitely a redeeming quality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's far more efficient methods of determining weather, but if it's anything to go by, our previous podcast guest said it was dry and windy in Font last week.
Well, that's so, as well.
Yeah. Hopefully that prevails.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I'm hopeful.
And on the topic of Font and its slopers, what are your thoughts on the conclusions we made on this podcast, I think with Nathan, about how uncool drags were?
I must admit that. I'm a passionate advocate for the three-finger drag, and I thought that list was entirely wrong.
We almost lost a listener.
Yeah, well, that was the last one I listened to. haven't tuned in since.
Yeah, they haven't. Well, there hasn't been much mention of the three-finger drag until now. So, stake your claim.
I just like three-finger drags. To be honest, the main reason I like three-finger drags is you can hold it. You can use it when you've got a bad finger, which I sort of have relatively unreliable fingers. So if there's one thing I can count on, it'll be that I can pretty much always three-finger drag. So that's a big part of why I like it. And also, I think I'm probably much like how you have fingers that are shaped quite nicely for crimping. I think I've got fingers that are shaped quite nicely for dragging.
You've got very long, long, slender fingers, haven't you?
Yeah, but I've got quite short pinkies. So crimping, anything more than a half crimp feels a bit weird, but like open hand stuff feels pretty good. But I've never got on board with open four, you know, how some people will like sort of drag, but with the pinky on. That's always felt a bit weird to me. Whereas just, three fingers is the sweet spot. It's all about that low angle, three finger dragging, and that high angle for crimping.
None of the turbo grimping. It's like, I don't know,
passive. The exact opposite of it, yeah.
Passive reverse fingers.
The sloth grip.
Yeah.
Do you have any goals for your own personal climbing, Sam?
I mean, I'd like to not like goal climbs particularly, but it'd be kind of nice to. I'm not really big into like projecting things, but I'd quite like to sort of maybe try and do a bit more projecting. I enjoy doing things like climbs relatively quickly, like in a session or maybe a couple of sessions, but I think as a result you get that initial like enjoyment of having done something quickly, and you kind of feel quite satisfied that you would, I don't know, you feel like you were good enough to do the climb. But I've also never had a climb where I've invested loads of time into it. So I've never had that kind of like satisfaction of having a climb that feels impossible and trying it until I do it. So probably I'd quite like to just have that, maybe try and do a bit more of that in the future. Sort of like try and sort of, basically.
Siege
have. Yeah, well, not necessarily siege, but it'd be nice to do something where like you sort of do it and you think, oh yeah, that was like right at my limit and flipping hard. Whereas
have you got,
I think
have you got anything
most
in mind,
of I'm quite keen for the boss, that problem of Ned's in the peak, because as far as harder things on gritstone go, that's kind of the one that I think would suit me the best. I tried it with you, Aiden, last year, and I've had another section on it since then, and it feels kind of doable. I haven't done the crux move, which is that you do this kind of like snatch for a crimp. It's kind of scary because you're on a bit of a like platform. You probably wouldn't, although that being said, I was there once for a gym, didn't do the move and basically fell off the platform. But you kind of like go for this crimp, and I think if you like don't quite catch it, you kind of whip your feet, sort of whip out towards this like the edge of this ledge, which you probably wouldn't really want to fall off. So for me, it felt like a bit of a mental thing. Like because it was such a hard move for me and it was a little bit scary, I basically just never didn't manage to do it on either of those sessions. I'm keen for that one because it's one of the harder things locally to, because I'd also, if I was going to be projecting something, I'd want it to be close to where I live, because obviously the logistics of projecting something that's further away is, well, it just makes it so much harder. So yeah, I think as far as specific climbs go, that's about the only one I've got on my list that I can think of. There's plenty of other ones I'd love to do, but are probably a little bit less feasible.
So and also more feeling of sticking away from the limestone.
Yeah, I mean, I've long since abandoned any aspirations of doing anything that hard on limestone. Really, it's not. I'm not very well suited to it. I just don't. I can't remember the last time I did anything hard on limestone. It's probably been quite a few years now.
No, it's probably good taste.
Well, it depends on the limestone. Like peak lime, sort of quintessential peak limestone, where it's generally like pulling on small holes, I'm really just not very good at. And I quite often my fingers aren't really structurally sound enough. Whereas gritstone is much more my cup of tea, where you don't even feel like you're pulling. You just need to wait for the conditions to be right, and then you just kind of stick and just vaguely squirm your way up something.
Yeah, it definitely requires you to move quite well then.
Yeah, I think
because you can't pull them.
Exactly. You've got to try and milk the most out of fairly marginal holds a lot of the time. But I kind of quite like that. But it is frustrating when a climb, dominantly whether you're going to do it or not, can sometimes on grit come down to just the conditions. So it is frustrating when you get to a climb and you feel like you could do it if the conditions were better.
Yeah.
Whereas I suppose with rock types like limestone, obviously conditions help, but they're maybe not quite as crucial.
Yeah. There's a bit more margin.
Yeah. But I'd like to get up to the lakes a bit more. Do a few more things up there, up your neck of the woods.
Yeah, it's a good thing or two. And yeah, you know,
I heard someone made a film about it called World Class, so it can't be that rubbish.
Yeah, I think there are actually some not really crimpy things in the lakes as well.
Yeah, no, that new climb of Dan's looks amazing, and it doesn't look that crimpy from the videos. That Eagle Huntress thing you put up.
Oh yeah.
That looks really good. I'd like to go and have a look at. Well, I think that's got a stand start as well. So
did Jack Palmieri do that recently?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
That could probably be applied to pretty much any eight in the country.
Yeah. If in doubt, he did it.
Yeah. He must have done the highest percentage, I reckon, of the ones there, or certainly one of them.
Yeah,
he must have done. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so impressive.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm psyched if I can do maybe I don't know. Can't remember the last time I climbed an eight, but doing more than one a week is pretty mind boggling in the UK, considering how fickle the weather is.
Considering that there'll be a lot of weeks where you actually can't, I imagine the weeks where you can climb outside, he probably averages three a week or something.
Mm. Machine.
We'd have to, yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah. We're going to have to make a start on these patroon questions.
Oh, yeah, we have.
Oh, I thought those questions were patroon questions.
No.
We've got a bit of a stack. Some of them will be quick. Some of them
we've crossed over.
Maybe fast. Yeah, we probably have crossed over some of them. But okay, I'm going to start this one. I'm going to split this one up into two because I'm going to work with our patroon here because I'm interested to expand it slightly. But Kate asks, what's your favorite UK crag and why? And I'd just like to maybe split that out into what's your favorite UK crag to film and what's your favorite UK crag to climb, if they're different?
I think my... maybe to climb, and I've not actually done that much here, but probably Simon's Seat or Lord's Seat up in Yorkshire. I don't know if you've been to either of, well, they're sort of the same crag. They're technically different, but they're kind of like, they're on the same hilltop. It's like sort of
that's
like,
where Pixie Pits is.
No, that's Crook Rise.
Oh yeah. No, okay. Yeah. No. Oh no, I do. I do know the one.
It's wait, where, yeah, no. It's where like McNab and things like that.
Yeah, are. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's yeah. I mean, I've been a few times, but I've not done a huge amount there. I just think it's really like it's such a nice crag.
Bit of a stomp.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a bit of a walk. But like the it's like it's kind of like moorland grit, and it's really like it's really nice grit. Like it's a lot nicer than some. Well, I prefer it to quite a lot of the grit sort of around the peak, I think. But the problem with it is quite often it needs a bit of a some of the bits need a bit of a scrub because it doesn't the holds don't the climbs don't get quite as much traffic. So That's kind of the problem with those crags is you have to invest quite a lot of time to get there. And then sometimes the problems won't have been climbed for ages, so you need to give them like a clean. Either there or one of the Moorland Yorkshire grit crags, I think. They're all pretty good, really. Like Rylestone's a good one as well. Like Lanny, but actually problems I'd like to climb, Lanny Bassam, I think, would probably be, or Lanny Basham, however you say it, probably be number one, I think. Just because of I think that's gotta be like one of the best climbs at boulders in like the UK, I think.
Yeah.
I've only briefly tried it. Love to do that.
I'm keen to try that.
And I was going to say for filming, probably maybe one of the like lakes crags, because obviously often they're like in the mountains, so like the scenery is always like really impressive. So it kind of makes it easy to make things look nice.
The mountainous crags, yeah. Some of the views.
Like if that crag that we went and looked at, that broad crag, if that had good climbing at, that would have been like probably the best, because the view off there was amazing.
Yeah, the scenery.
Basically on the top of Scarfell.
Yeah, yeah, like right from just below the lip of Broad Crag, so right next to Scarfell. Yeah, big day out that one. Probably about like 4.5 hours of stomping on big hills or something. I was ruined.
All right. We got one from Arian Malik, which is, how is two friends climbing on a little board in a dingy cellar so compelling? And do you edit it to create a sense of narrative?
I will try and edit it I'll try and create. I mean, I think it would be a bit rich to call it a storyline, but I'll try and make it quite like entertain, like, yeah, try and put some sort of a narrative in it. Probably the main thing is, like I was saying before, like we all know each other. We're all like good friends. So like we're all pretty relaxed and like natural. And like, as I was saying, Jim's obviously like got a lot of energy and he's you're both funny, but like, I think Jim brings Aiden out a bit more. Like I think you kind of like bounce off each other really well. And then also I think like, the main reason it's good to watch probably is the fact that you're both like absurdly strong at board climbing. So it's just kind of fun to watch people doing like concept moves on little wooden edges.
Certainly good fun. Yeah. But yeah, Arian Malik actually had a few questions and he wanted to also hear your thoughts. We kind of mentioned it earlier, the discussion at Tom Randall, and he describes him as other Sam, which is the discussion they had on the Nugget about.
Is he called Sam as well?
I think, is that the guy who does?
There's a Sam that works with Tom who does the Climbers Crag YouTube.
Yeah, that was in there.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember the name of that.
I don't know if he's received his Sam mug or not.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if he's on brand.
Actually, he has nice questions of, well, actually, it's not really a question. He said he had a little dream that Patagonia could send me and you, Sam Lawson, to the US for a year and just film. That sounds quite nice.
Yeah, that does sound quite nice. Maybe if you get to work on charting a ship so you can get there without breaking your no-flying rule, we could make it happen.
That would be quite a fun journey anyway. Maybe we could build a ship, Sam.
Oh, I could build a board on the ship.
Yeah, I mean, that's been done.
Has it?
Oh, that it looks so good.
Seb Berth. Have you seen Seb Berth?
I don't think so.
He's like a big wall climber, and he went to climb on El Cap, but he like sailed from the UK.
Yeah, good effort.
And but, on their boat, they had a board, and it was the coolest board ever. It looked like if you took a swing at the top, you could generally land in the sea.
I don't know how I've missed this. That's
yeah, cool. It's quality. You should have a yeah, Seb Berth. He's actually also on Patagonia team. So yeah, it has been done. Takes about 3 weeks. I think maybe it took him 25 days. So yeah, it's,
wowzers.
Maybe it's possible.
There's obviously always the small chance that you'll sink.
Yeah, I mean, like,
yeah, I suppose
it's glass half full. But
we were watching Titanic last night. So,
are you watching Titanic?
We were watching Titanic last night. So, I think sinking in the Atlantic is in my mind.
The question is, if me and Aidan are drowning and there's only one piece of wood big enough to hold one of us, who's going to sacrifice themselves?
I think if we're going to stick with the Sam storyline, I think it's going to have to be a Sam sacrificing themselves for Aidan. Perhaps all of the Sams will surround Aidan on the door.
Body heat conserved. Wow, there's actually so many questions.
Another one from Ari Malik, which was, what personally inspires you about climbing? Quite a nice question.
Probably like the just going out to the crags and having days out. I think in my own climbing, the best days are the ones, like, ideally have done some climbing, but kind of like I would, if I was given the choice between having done like a climb that wasn't sort of like at a crag that was kind of far to get to over a crag that was like a bit of a day out, I'd probably pick the one that's like a bit of a day out, because I feel like the whole package is quite nice when you've got to like do a pretty big walk in, and then if you like, and it's always more rewarding when you do the climbs at those crags, because you have that little bit of like almost that little bit of pressure of like it's not that easy to go back. So I think probably that's what I enjoy most in climbing, I guess, was the question, what inspires me? What do I get? Well, I just answered my own question.
We can revisit that maybe after a month of it.
Inspires me. Aidan, that one time he dragged a hold.
Oh yeah, that was in the film. Yeah, that was a quintessential three-finger drag.
I looked at it and I was like, oh my god, maybe I could climb that. And then I realized all the other holds were definitely grifters.
Yeah, quintessential grifters. Nah, you could try it.
I like this. Lawrence B asks, how do you go about finding your creative voice? But he also asks, how has that changed over time? So how has your creative voice changed from Fat Sam Productions?
Well, to be honest, I feel like I was more creative as Fat Sam Productions.
Oh, no.
It's a lot more of a creative name than Wedge. I don't know, just like what I've initially watching lots of the old climbing films, like Wind Sessions and things like that. And now probably still the same. Like just watching not specifically climbing things, just like watching, well, I watch quite a lot, I've gotten into watching a lot of like documentaries and stuff recently, which I think is always quite cool, because even if what you're watching is not related to climbing, you can kind of see how climbing could be, how you could do something similar in climbing, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
And like music as well, quite into like I find like listening to music's a good way as well.
Yeah, it's quite emotive.
Mm.
I actually quite like that about I always feel like the music matches the vibe of the film quite nicely. It was good. It was not too heavy duty on the last film.
Yeah, actually, that's probably how things have changed. If you listen to the old videos, the music's definitely a lot more, shall we say, acquired taste and intense, which I think probably at the time I thought was mint.
Some people do love that as well, don't they?
But yeah, it's probably like some people would absolutely love it. Some people would absolutely hate it. In fact, I'm sure lots of people do hate it. So I'd say that's how things have changed. I think I've probably psych music every now and again, but I think I've kind of my style of filmmaking has probably moved away from that a little bit more.
I'm gonna open this next question up to the floor so everyone can have a stab at this one, because it's what does the world have to learn from the UK climbing scene?
Sorry, I didn't catch the end of that question, other than what does the world have to learn from the UK
climbing scene?
Our climbing scene.
But maybe that's two questions.
I was going to say, I don't know what it could learn from the UK.
And what's your advice for those seeking meaning and purpose? sorry. Back to the question.
I don't feel like I'm qualified to answer these.
I've got a punt at this one. I think the UK climbing scene, I think we're the best at optimistically heading to a crag which is probably going to be wet.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I agree with that.
Turner is the best of us all at that.
Yeah, yeah, that was Turner's basically final thing of just like, if there's any chance, get in the car, and if it's still wet, just keep driving.
I must admit, I think I've lost that a little bit in the last few years. I used to very much be like, every opportunity where I could go climbing and try and go, whereas now I've definitely lost that, like, just it looks questionable, but I'll just chance it. I don't know.
Maybe it's sensible at times, but...
it's definitely sensible, but at the same time, there's nothing better than there being a day when no one else is going out, so like, no, it looks rubbish, and you're like, no, it's going to be good. And then you go somewhere and it actually is good. And the feeling when you were like, when you feel like you've beaten the weather.
Yeah, when you conquer the odds.
Yeah. You don't even need to have had a very good day's climbing, but just actually having been climbing on a day when people didn't think it was going to be any good is like pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that is all that, if there is only that, that you probably can learn from the UK climbing scene. But it's like being a UK climber is like Evel Knievel, isn't it? The value's in the attempt.
I don't know. I mean, like, it's a pretty maybe in how to, we feel like, well, I say we, not me included in this, but the UK as a whole is pretty good at like crimpy climbing, aren't they?
Like, yeah,
probably some of the best, I would have thought.
Historically, we've produced some very good outdoor climbers for like some generations, really.
Well, I mean, at the moment, like, you and Will are definitely like arguably some of the best in the world at you're obviously predominantly a boulder, but I suppose Will is like kind of does loads of things, doesn't he? But
an all rounder.
Aiden's going to be an all rounder.
What?
Are you still going on a sport climbing trip?
Aiden's going on a sport climbing trip. He promised us.
Oh yeah, did I promise that?
Yeah, you said it on camera. Yeah, but microphone.
I forgot my harness. It's actually true. I bought a rope and a gree-gree and I forgot my harness.
Oh no.
Was
it you forgot or did you?
Well, I did actually forget because I did actually want it for cleaning boulders, but
yeah, exactly.
but I feel like if I really want to go on a sport climbing trip, I can get myself a harness. I'll sort it out.
It's like I've only been using my harness as a weight belt for about 3 years.
I don't even know where mine is.
You don't even own one, do you?
Oh no, I've been rumbled. No, I've got one somewhere.
Tucked away.
I like this is more of a kind of like, it's kind of a discussion point. It's not so much of a question, but it's something to, it's like interesting to ponder. But Lawrence B says, tons of the open quotes, I sent this hard thing, close quotes, videos follow the hero's journey narrative arc. How does story arc work if we are showing more failure? So it's like, how do you structure the narrative of a video if you haven't got a send? I think that's quite interesting.
I don't know. I think probably most of my videos do have some degree of sending in, but I think on the climbs that don't get done, probably it sort of depends on the climb, but quite often, like if someone's like made progress on it, it's quite nice to see the sort of like the stages of progress they've made, like whether that's like if it's sort of broken down into like trying moves or haven't. I quite like it. I always think it's quite good when someone gets really close but doesn't do it. I always think that's quite a like engaging story. And then actually when you get to the end of the video, sometimes the fact that they didn't do it is almost quite nice because it's like relatable. Mm. I think that it's cool that that's kind of what a lot of Sean's YouTube channel has, or in quite a lot of his videos it'll be him like trying something, but you obviously see the you see a lot of the process and kind of it doesn't matter that they don't do it. It'd be nice it's always nice to finish with someone climbing something, I think, but not necessarily, it's not like a necessity, or like in Mastery, you not doing Poison the Well, I think was obviously would have been cool if you did it, but for the purposes of the story and the development of you as a climber, I think it was better that you didn't, because you sort of had that like moment of reflection that you realized that you didn't need to, that you basically didn't like it when you had this like attachment to sort of this challenge of trying to do the two things. Cause that's such that's definitely a thing. Like you can kind of almost ruin something that you've done and you're really pleased with by like getting overexcited and then just quickly moving on to the next thing. And then if you don't do that, you forget about the other thing that you did. So
it's like, it will have come out very recently, but the chat we had with Dan Turner, where he was basically saying like him not doing Monkey Wedding was obviously quite devastating. And he basically stopped climbing for a couple of months because of motivation. But there were certain lessons, like profound lessons that he learned from doing that, that like extrapolated into like the rest of his life as well, which he definitely wouldn't have learned if he'd done the climb. That's quite cool, isn't it? Like, and to be able to then like try and tell a bit of that, or like try and communicate some of those lessons, I think is, I think definitely positive for climbing. Few and far between, I guess, those videos.
Yeah. I think they're getting more popular now, though. Like you say, it's nice for people to see climbers that are really good not doing things, because it can seem like people just do stuff all the time, which is rarely the case.
Mm.
Although that being said, I feel like there must just be like some sort of Sam magic, but I feel like pretty much whenever I go out, you end up doing something.
Me?
I can't remember many sessions where I've been out with you where you've not done a climb.
We should go on more trips, Sam. I haven't done climbs. Actually, no, I did a couple of climbs yesterday. But before that, I hadn't done climbs in weeks. Get yourself out. Maybe I'll get myself up some projects. We had a question from Moritz, which I think you'd kind of already asked, but we've kind of already answered, but I think it's slightly different about the shorter videos that are basically just hardboard climbing, whether you always have like a concept or you let them do whatever and does most of the magic in post. So I guess that's talking about directing me and, or like the people in the videos as well, like me and Jim in that context. I guess he's saying, like, do you have a concept when you go into filming the videos, or is it quite like a see what comes out of the footage and make what you can?
If it's you and Jim, I'll usually just let you crack on and try and prompt. If something that's entertaining is happening, I'll try and prompt that to continue, because I don't think much is needed really when there's the two of you, because it's pretty entertaining regardless. But I think maybe like if it's just like that one that we filmed in at your border in the lakes, that had a bit more of a plan for that one, because there were like definite things that I wanted to, obviously you have your bird and replica and stuff, and you had like a few replicas and things like that. That one had a bit more of a, had a little bit of a plan with kind of ones where you're just on like Jim's home board, not particularly, just kind of let it happen. Well, the first one we filmed was kind of by accident really, because we planned to climb at the Roaches and me and Jim drove out there and it was absolutely soaked and we were just like, don't even bother coming, maybe we'll just have a board section.
Yeah, so I remember that. Yeah,
in many ways that was probably a silver lining of a wet day, it turns out.
That was the first ever board session. I forgot about that. Yeah.
All I remember is me and Jim were like, we've done like the best part of 3 hours driving to climb in Jim's cellar. But
yeah, and I also drove for about 3 hours because I was coming down. I think I was going down south, but I ended up coming by Sheffield when I was going to stop at Nth Power.
Yeah. Mm. So basically, I don't really plan the.
Yeah. See what happens.
See what happens, and if something interesting is happening, roll with it.
Yeah. And if it's boring, never publicize it.
Yeah.
Throw it up on the Patreon. No, I'm joking.
They get all the offcuts.
Yeah. Moritz also asked, what is your go-to video recording setup for indoors or outdoors?
I kind of use the same. I have a Sony A7S3, which is kind of, well, I think probably most people that do YouTube relatively seriously will have something, either the same camera or something similar. It's like it's kind of just like it's just really good, basically. It's like kind of pretty much any modern camera kind of looks pretty good these days, but that there are certain things about this camera that are really nice. Like, for example, if you're filming inside, it's really good with bad lighting, and it's got, and for, particularly for like filming climbing stuff, when it's just you, it's got like really good autofocus. So for sometimes if you're filming someone, like a moving object, like someone climbing, and you're also moving at the same time, it's very handy to be able to like rely on the autofocus for those sorts of things. Because if you were following someone that's moving while you're also moving and also trying to adjust focus and also trying to like adjust your ND filter or whatever for the changing light, if you're outside, basically it's really hard to do. It's nice. Yeah, it's really nice having the autofocus for that sort of thing. So yeah, that's kind of what I use for pretty much everything.
And it's clad in a small rig, right?
Yes, it is clad in a small rig.
Fair knowledge it's a, there, Aidan.
It's a nickname I like to give Sam.
I've got a cage on it, which is basically like it's like a cage that has loads of mounting points on it, so you can attach various things to it. And the maker's small rig, which Aidan finds very amusing.
It's my nickname for Sam. Small rig. Yeah, that's mean.
We have a question that was similar from that from Lacey, who was asking about your setup, but also just wanted to know where did you learn how to capture climbing like you do? Like, how did you learn how to do it?
I wouldn't say necessarily done anything specifically towards climbing other than filming, just going and filming climbing, and you sort of work out what looks good. But in terms of just like actual learning video stuff, basically learned it all on YouTube pretty much. Yeah. I think you can learn a lot of things from YouTube. I'm definitely not the most technically, probably not as technically sound as someone that did like stuff at like film school or things like that. But I think, yeah, you can learn a lot from YouTube or from like, I've sort of taken like a few, like you can just get the various people make like courses and things like that, which will, yeah, basically teach you loads of kind of like skills needed to make videos and things like that. But yeah, there's a lot online. And most of it, and a lot of it's free, and it's pretty good.
And he also asks what software you use to edit.
I actually recently switched for ages I just used Adobe Premiere Pro because I had that's part of this like suite of softwares called the Creative Cloud. Well, you can get it on its own or you can get the suite, and that has like Photoshop and After Effects and all those sorts of things in. But for anyone that's used that a lot, well, it's actually part of that was down to my computer as well, but I was getting a bit pissed off with it because it didn't run very well for me. So I switched to another software called DaVinci Resolve, which was initially more of like a color grading software, but now it's still really good for that. Well, much better for that than Premiere Pro is, but it's also really good for doing pretty much everything else editing wise. So I use that for quite a lot of stuff, but I will still use Premiere Pro for things. I think Premiere Pro is probably I find it a bit more intuitive. I don't know if that's just because I've been using it for so long, but yeah, either or is pretty good. Oh, and the other thing, DaVinci Resolve is way cheaper. It's either free or a one-time payment, whereas the Adobe stuff's quite expensive. Like you have to pay like monthly or yearly, or I can't remember which one.
I think you can tell by the lack of comments that me and Sam Pryor.
I was going to say, I feel like
we're a bit out of our depth.
Yeah, I know absolutely none of this.
I was very
for listeners that do.
I was talking, not very inclusive into the conversation.
Yeah, but people who do understand it, maybe they'll find that interesting.
Yeah. If you haven't used either, I would recommend probably DaVinci because it just seems to be getting consistently better with every update. Whereas I would argue that every time Premiere gets updated, I don't feel like it gets improved. But maybe that's just me. It's also DaVinci is also a lot cheaper. So
there you go. That's a bonus. Functional device.
The only video I've ever tried to make was me trying to stitch together my big, huge video of all the beta for the school board problems. And I filmed every single one from like a slightly different place, and it's just unwatchably awful.
I was going to say, I haven't seen that anywhere.
But people love it.
It's pretty terrible, that's why.
As we know, people love board climbing, so I think it'll be more popular than you think.
There's not a lot of banter, but there is moments where I get lost mid-send and people have to tell me where I'm going, which is quite good value.
Yeah, actually, I remember a few of those.
Yeah.
Just remember, mate, you're climbing on Milkit. Sexy Flanders has asked you, does he like beans? So yeah,
first
you can,
things first, that's an impeccable username.
Yes, it's possibly the best of the bunch.
I like beans.
Ah, yeah.
Big nice. Fan of beans. Not as good as peas, though.
That's exactly what I mean.
So I said this would come up.
and to clarify, are we talking about beans like baked beans?
I don't know. I like a variety of beans. I can't really think of any beans I don't like.
That's good. Well,
there we go.
There we go.
Maybe but you do prefer question. Peas.
Are there any beans that you don't like? I do prefer peas, yeah.
Actually, like, yeah, you actually probably consume the most bird's eye of anyone I've ever met.
I'd be worried if anyone consumed more than I did.
You're on the threshold of
ODing on critical, peas.
Yeah, critical bird's eye consumption.
Hence, I named a boulder problem Captain Birdseye. And it turns out, I was not aware of this, probably naively, it turns out every problem on that buttress is named after the first Ascensionist's child. So I now have to name my first child Captain Birdseye.
Wow.
But I mean, there's worse things. I might get a sponsorship out of it, in which case...
Oh, that'd be pretty. That'd be a pretty good sponsorship. Wait, yeah, Birdseye, they do sweet corn as well. Oh, wait, no, that's green. That's right. Yeah, it is Birdseye. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
I mean, Birdseye probably not the most ethical company. So
it sounds like is it different to Green Giant?
Yeah, Green Giant.
Separate.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I suppose you could always.
They just do frozen goods, don't they?
It's just that and fish fingers, isn't it? Really.
Yeah. I feel like this is definitely going to be on the Patreon bit of the podcast, isn't it?
When we get feedback, this is normally the bit that people love the most, is when we just talk about random shit.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, no, we don't.
I was wondering, you could probably name your child just Birdseye in the hope that they then join the military and achieve the rank of captain.
Yeah. Forethought, yeah. A Birdseye is just like a sick name for like someone that's, I don't know, like a sniper or something.
Yeah.
Because you're like, or like a pilot.
Yeah, Birdseye. You know,
Birdseye view.
Yeah. Maybe they can charter ships as well. And then they can like sail people to the US.
Yeah, create yourself someone who's willing to take you to the US.
Yeah, that might take a bit longer than 3 weeks.
So yeah, that's it.
Just charge it.
Yeah, that's a little while here. Sexy Flanders also asked any non-climbing and non-filming passions and interests
besides eating peas.
Yeah. Yes.
I've got a few. I like Magic: The Gathering, which is a card game.
Have they arrived yet? Your cards.
Oh yeah.
Oh, phew.
Got a whole new deck. It's mint.
They're taking weeks.
Yeah, well, so I chased it up. Turns out my order got lost, so they refunded me.
Oh, damn. But you just bought them again.
I got them cheaper elsewhere, so it's all good.
Oh, there you go.
So I like games of various kinds.
I feel you're into that stuff as well, aren't you, Sam Pryor?
Do you play Magic?
I don't play, not since I was a kid. I used to, but only when I was a kid.
We could start our own thing without Aiden.
Sorry, what?
We need to show that we're independent.
No. There's a revolt amidst the Sams.
We own the means of media production, Aiden.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably about it. I don't feel like most of my interests are somewhat centered around climbing ish.
Yeah. Or
outdoor related things. Quite like running and stuff.
We had a few questions from Don Jeebus, but most of which we've covered. But one bit that wasn't covered was when you guys started doing the films, was it always you who was doing the recording, or did Joe do it as well?
Mainly me, although actually I was the one that sort of started it, but for a while Joe was going climbing when I wasn't there, and I'd just give him my camera and get him to film himself for me, which is very good of him. So a lot of the old films, like probably my first attempt at a big film, probably about 50% of that would have been filmed by Joe, because I wasn't even there. So yeah, but I've always done all the editing and stuff. I suppose I've been the one that's predominantly interested in them, but Joe definitely used to do quite a lot of the actual getting of footage for some of the older ones.
Is the Fat Sam content still available?
I think I changed it to Lawson Beater. No, in fact, it might be called like old school Lawson Beater Productions, because everything on there is pretty old. And I thought, well, at that time, I had like a, I suppose I still have a Vimeo channel called Lawson Beater Productions, but Vimeo's gone a bit weird, and it basically deleted all my stuff because I stopped paying for it. So, there is a YouTube channel called Ultimate Movie Productions that has the old stuff on if you want a bit of a laugh. Some of the videos will say Fat Sam Productions on them, I think.
Oh, yes.
I used to have this intro that I might have to bring back, where I basically just found, like, I can't remember what I was editing in at the time, but like I just found this effect and I was like, that looks sick, I'll put it on everything. I'm pretty sure in one of the videos, I just, at one point, Joe falls off and it just cuts to a black screen with a sad face emoji.
Oh, nice. Nice cuts.
Which, if I do say so myself, is inspired.
Yeah. I really like that kind of thing. I think the emojis, like the sad faces, and they've died a death, but I prefer them. They've got more flame.
It was like analog. It wasn't like the little yellow face. It was like colon open bracket.
Yeah, colon open bracket.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Going retro.
I miss those days.
Yeah,
I like
Aiden,
it.
Aiden still does use those.
Yeah, I use those.
What a cutie.
keep them alive, you know. These emojis are too... high tech.
you're an emoji Luddite, which is not a great surprise, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know what the time is. Yeah. Don't know what.
Yeah, so I think they're all still there.
Well, they might get some more traffic.
Yeah.
Big
if you're listening, check out Fat Sam Productions.
Remember, the A is a 4.
Which one?
Good point.
All of them.
It used to be in the fat. No.
Oh,
that would be too confusing.
Very good.
I think we've covered almost all of the Patreon questions. If we didn't ask your question, I think it's because we felt like it had been covered in the chat. So, yeah, apologies if we didn't get to your question.
Please don't be too offended.
Yes. I'll ask a question next time and then we'll get to it next time. Hopefully.
Yeah. So if you want to go support Fat Sam, join the Patreon.
Which is presumably under Wedge Climbing, not Fat Sam.
Yeah, no, it's not. Fat Sam is actually my shortened gamer tag. The full thing is Fat Sam Ladies Man.
Oh, wow, this just keeps getting better, man.
This is a gift that keeps on giving.
I rang up to cancel my like membership, and the guy was like, "And is this a Fats for my ladies?" Because there was a 4 in the name, and I was like, "Yeah, I just say that's what it is, then explain what it's meant to be."
I feel like they've said that specifically to try and get you to go, "No, that's not me. Must be someone else."
Very good. We'll speak to you soon.
Yeah,
nice
speak
one.
To you soon.
Catch
so.
In a bit.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.